My name is David Miller, and until last Friday, I was Professor of Political Sociology at the University of Bristol, having been an academic since around about 1990. That's quite a long time. And I have historically done research on powerful institutions and organisations, starting off by doing research on the conflict in the north of Ireland for my PhD. Which was completed in 1994, which looked at propaganda in relation to the conflict in Northern Ireland. And ever since then, I've been interested in questions of propaganda and power, the way in which powerful organizations and institutions are able to exert power through the media, through propaganda, but also through direct lobbying and manipulation of policy, capture of policy, of science, etc. So I'm interested in how power operates, how power networks operate. In recent years, I guess part of my interest has been in looking at the way in which powerful networks have been involved in the production of Islamophobia, especially in the post 9/11 period. And part of that interest has taken me to the conflict over Palestine and to the actions of the Israeli state itself, but also of the wider organizations collectively known as the Zionist movement, which of course are active in this country and in many other countries in the world. So that's the kind of issue which has got me into the spotlight in relation to the University of Bristol and has resulted in me being fired last Friday.
Well, look, you're talking about Islamophobia, but there's a very genuine reason for this, and that is you mentioned yourself the 9/11 attacks, but then also, for example, in this country, this is just one example because we also had, of course, the 2005 7/7 bombings allegedly by Islamists, and also in 2017, these various attacks that there were just before the general election, including the London Bridge attacks. And the Westminster Bridge attack, possibly even the Manchester Arena attack, and these have all been blamed on Islamist elements.
Yeah, is that a question?
Well, I'm saying that is Islamist is you're talking about Islamophobia, but it sounds to me as if there is a genuine Islamic threat to this country.
Oh, I see. Right. Well, I mean, the term Islamist is itself a term which is arguably Islamophobic. I mean, what we see in terms of threats to this country are manifold. I mean, there are threats to this country from a variety of places, but the argument that there is some unique threat from, if I can put it like this, Muslims, or, I mean, the word you use was Islamist, which is a term which is so broad as to cover really a very wide range of Muslim political activity. I mean, and so, what we see in the post 9/11 period is the creation of the idea that there is such a thing as an Islamist, which is a radical Muslim, which has some bearing on a relationship to political violence, especially anti-Western political violence. And we see that because, for the very good reason and the very obvious reason, that Western powers wanted to invade and attack some of the countries in the Middle East, which are Muslim majority countries. So what they had to do was they had to demonize Muslims and say there is a threat from Muslims. And really the threat from Muslims in general is non-existent. And the whole question about what kind of threat there is from political violence to this country is one which is much more complex than is the position given in most of the media.
I mean, aren't you in danger of sort of swinging over to the other side? In that, I mean, for example, here in Bristol, we had a guy who'd converted to Islam who was arrested. He was trying to make bombs here in Bristol itself, and you're saying there's no such thing as this Islamic terror.
Am I saying that there are no people engaged in political violence in this country who happen to be Muslims? No, I'm not saying that. But equally, if one looks at the evidence supplied to, for example, Europol, the European Policing Agency, by all the members of the European Union, which was supplied up until we left the Union, by the Home Office as well, one sees that the proportion of terror attacks throughout Europe and including in this country, which are categorized by the police themselves and by the Home Offices in each country as being related to Muslims or Islamic extremism or whatever terminology they use, is vanishingly small. I mean, it's at its best, it's between 5 and 10%, but usually it's it's lower than 2%. And that's the official statistics of the police agencies in those countries. And so what we find is that although those kinds of attacks are a really very small proportion of the actual numbers of attacks recorded by the police and by intelligence agencies, that instead that we get in the media an overwhelming attention to the threat of the alleged threat of Muslims or of what's called Islamists. And you know, the term Islamist is a recent invention, an invention deliberately to target Muslims in the post 9/11 period.
Now, what the university is apparently, I mean, this is allegedly what you said, and maybe you could corroborate it or not, is that the Israel wants to impose its will all over the world. And this was taken by Jewish students as an anti-Semitic comment. They were saying that you were inciting hatred against Jewish students.
You're conflating together a number of separate things there. It certainly is the case that the Israelis have a foreign policy strategy which seeks to influence the domestic policies and the foreign policies of very many governments across the world, including, of course, our own government. I don't know that anyone ever said that referring to the foreign policy strategies of the Israeli government was anti-Semitic. It certainly isn't anti-Semitic. I don't think anyone's ever even suggested that it was anti-Semitic. What they complained about was that I had said that I had been attacked and complained about, that's the words I used, by the head of the Jewish Society at Bristol University in 2019, the then head of the Jewish Society in Bristol University, and the president of the Union of Jewish Students, which is the British and Irish national organisation which organises to support Israel on campuses up and down the country. Now, as a matter of fact, I had been attacked and complained about by those individuals and by those organisations in a confected campaign of 3 years length to try and get me sacked for comments that they alleged were anti-Semitic, but which, in point of fact, were not anti-Semitic and were shown not to be anti-Semitic by the investigations conducted by the University of Bristol on several occasions. So the idea that that I have been attacked and complained about is something which is not only true, but which I had not put into the public domain myself. It was put into the public domain that those people were involved in complaining about me by those people themselves on a number of occasions. So I was simply referring to the fact of this. Now, when I say use the word attacked, what I'm referring to there is a political attack on me and an attempt to have me sacked from my job by defaming me as an anti-Semite. And by engaging in conduct which in itself is against the university's rules and constitutes a form of harassment and bullying of me, and that's the campaign which has been running against me for 3 years. And the objection they made was that I referred to the fact that they had complained about me. They had.
Okay, so where does it go from here? Do you going to appeal?
Yes, I'll appeal. There's an internal appeal, and then of course if that fails, there is the possibility of an employment tribunal. There may be other legal avenues available to me, which, if it's possible, I will pursue.
So what do you think is really behind this, David?
Well, this is a part of the ongoing assault on academic freedom, which we see in this country and in other countries in the Western world by powerful forces. In this particular case, it's an attack which has come from Israel. It's directed by the Israeli government, and to do that, it coordinates with Zionist organizations throughout the world. The Union of Jewish Students, I should hasten to point out, is not an organization which just represents Jews. It doesn't represent all Jews. Anti-Zionists find it very difficult to join and are often hounded out of the UJS. The UJS is explicitly, by constitution, a pro-Israel organization. And that is the problem with this, that the campaign against me was initiated not by students in the beginning, but by a pro-Israel organization. And when that organization had its complaint rejected because it wasn't a student, they contacted and encouraged the students to make a manifestly hopeless complaint about me, which was subsequently dismissed. And then in February this year, there was a confected outrage about comments I'd made mentioning the fact of the previous complaint, and comments I've made about Zionism, and that has had the effect of having me sacked. Now, the confected outrage was confected by student groups on campus, but also by a whole range of pro-Israel and Zionist organisations, the Board of Deputies of British Jews, the Jewish Leadership Council, the Community Security Trust, the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Anti-Semitism, which, of course, as many of your listeners will know, is funded by Zionist individuals and foundations. And so there was a confection the idea that I was anti-Semitic. I've been routinely defamed as anti-Semitic. I'm not. I'm a lifelong anti-racist. And what we see here is the same process now affecting the universities as has affected the Labour Party. The campaign to get rid of Jeremy Corbyn is part of the same effort. And they now have switched their attention. Now they've got now they've captured the Labour Party, as more or less everybody knows. They are now intent on capturing the universities, and they've come for me first. But they are also currently pursuing cases in Warwick, in Glasgow, in Leeds, and in other places too, which many people won't be aware of. And we will see much more of this in the coming period. They're doing the same kind of thing in the States, and have done the same kind of thing in other countries like France and Germany. So this is an international campaign by a hostile foreign state, i.e. Israel. And the sooner we recognise that and take measures to counteract it, the better. And just to finish on that, I mean, if you want to look at an analysis of that campaign, look at the diaries of Alan Duncan, who was a minister who the Israelis tried to have removed from being a minister as a result of his moderately pro-Palestine politics. I mean, he makes it very clear that there's an entrenched foreign espionage campaign against those who in this country will speak out for Palestinian rights. And, you know, we have to recognise that, or it will continue to be successful.
Well, you talk about Israel as a hostile foreign state. Actually, no, they're one of our closest allies. In fact, many people say that the Five Eyes intelligence sharing agreement has got a little clause in there where actually we are sharing our highest levels of intelligence with the Israeli signals intelligence people, the Israeli intelligence too. So, no, they're not a hostile state. They're actually one of our closest allies.
They're one of our closest allies, which also routinely plots to remove politicians, elected politicians, including conservative ones, who don't meet their requirements. So, I mean, that's the kind of hostile state we're talking about.
The university talk about their duty of care to their students, and that you are being removed as part of that duty of care because they've got to look after their students. But actually, looking at the statistics, they have one of the highest suicide rates of their students in the country.
That's true, and that is very worrying. And if one was to look at that a little bit closer, that might be something which is journalistically profitable. I mean, I think that the other question, of course, is not just the duty of care to students, but the duty of care to staff. I mean, they have failed in their duty of care to me, most obviously. But when my colleagues in the university signed letters in support of me or tweeted in support of me, they have been subject to a deluge of trolling and threats for them to have to lose their jobs. And the university has done very little to defend them against that. And let me also say that these complaints first started in April 2019, so, you know, 3 years ago. The complaints were made in relation to a lecture I gave on Islamophobia. So the objection they made was that I referred to parts of the Zionist movement as being engaged in helping to foment Islamophobia and prejudice and racism against Muslims. And that is a fact. And the problem with that, of course, is that it means that Muslim students, Arab students and Palestinian students on campus find it difficult to raise issues about racism against them in case they are accused of being anti-Semitic.
Now, you mentioned Jeremy Corbyn, but really, this is kind of the reasons that he's been suspended from the Labour Party, the reasons that Ken Livingstone were. All the kernel of this is this kind of contradiction between Jewishness, the state of Israel, and Zionism. Can you just unpick all that for us? I know it's a big question, but You know, how is it that these three words, the Zionist movement, which is behind the creation of the State of Israel over, you know, more than a century, and the fact that someone maybe have chosen a religion or have been born into a religion of faith, and also this ethnic thing of the because Jewishness is not just a religion, it's also an ethnic thing, David.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the State of Israel was created through force of arms and through what the Palestinians call the Nakba, the catastrophe, whereby 750,000 of Palestinian indigenous people were forced out to create the State of Israel. And that process of ethnic cleansing is something which continues today. It continued with the invasion and occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, of the Golan Heights, etc. in 67. And it continues today, as we all saw in May this year, with the ongoing colonization of Sheikh Jarrah and Silwan by settlers. So what we see there is a political project to colonize and to settle Palestine, which they call Israel. And that's not the same thing as being Jewish, right? There are many, many thousands of Jews who are opposed to that project and who are opposed to the occupation and the human rights abuses that necessarily come with Israeli state's existence and function. So this is not to do with Jews. There are many, many Jews who are anti-Zionist, many of whom have supported me. And indeed, there are many Christians who are actually also Zionists. The largest proportion of Zionists in the world really is likely Christians, especially in the US, Christian Zionists. So this is not about the Jews are about anti-Semitism. It's about the actions of a particular state in a particular historical period, and the historical period is now. And what we see in Israel is ongoing ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians. And if people speak up for that, then they are denounced as being anti-Semitic. Now, the reason for that is because the Israelis know that their activity and actions are deeply, deeply unpopular. And you saw that even within the Labour Party the other week at its conference, with a really quite militant motion on Israel as an apartheid state was passed. And so the Israelis need to do something to counteract the hostility that their actions cause. And what one of their weapons of choice is to say, people who are anti-Zionist or who stick up for the Palestinians or stick up for Palestinian rights are just anti-Semitic. And that's because the State of Israel is the Jewish state. And if you're hostile to Israel, then you're hostile to the Jews in general. Now, of course, that's an argument which is absurd, but which nevertheless is at the heart of the Zionist movement's arguments. And that's the kind of arguments they deployed against me, that when I talk about Israel, what I really mean is the Jews. Well, no, I don't. Everybody can see that there's a distinction between being racist against Jews and being critical of the Israeli state and its policies, actions, and even its formation. So that's my potted guide to the distinction between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. But it really cannot be allowed to stand. If we allow it to stand that there is no distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, what we're saying is that the colonization and ethnic cleansing of Palestine will continue until there are no Palestinians left there.
Do you think the idea of academic freedom includes the idea of having academics that hold racist views?
Absolutely not. I mean, the law is pretty clear on that academic freedom is a really very strong protection for academics to pursue the research that they are interested in pursuing, to publish that research and to speak about it. I mean, academic freedom even extends to the political statements of academics in political fora. Now, the statements I made about being attacked by the Zionist student groups was a statement in a political meeting outside of work, but academic freedom even protects that, but it doesn't protect the spreading of hateful views or of racist views. So if I had been racist, if I'd been racist against the Jews in those meetings, then academic freedom is limited and can be limited to that extent. But of course, I've never done that, and that's been recognised by internal inquiries in Bristol all the way through this process. So that of course there are limits in the law to academic freedom and indeed freedom of speech, and they are one of the clear limits is racism, and racism is not allowable because it's the encouragement of hatred against people with, as the Equality Act puts it, protected characteristics.
Yes, bizarre, really. If you think, you go back 100 years, it was almost de rigueur racism in the UK. Yeah. But look, there's a dog whistle side to this, David, and that is that for being sacked for anti-Semitism from Bristol University, the implication is really that you are a Nazi.
Well, I haven't been sacked for being anti-Semite. In fact, just the opposite. The Bristol University statement said that none of my comments were found to be unlawful. And what they mean by that, and what they refused to say, is that none of my statements were found to be anti-Semitic. In fact, they were explicitly found to be not anti-Semitic and not to engage the Equality Act. But of course, you know, that doesn't stop journalists from trying to insinuate that my comments about the Jews, which I haven't, of course, made, are something to do with me being sacked. They weren't. I mean, that's completely wrong. And I'm not surprised that journalists do try and make that kind of implication.
You're saying that there's other potential disputes in other universities coming down the line. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, there are cases at the University of Glasgow. Two separate cases I'm aware of where there are have been complaints. There are complaints, have been quite a lot of complaints, as I understand it, at Warwick University, taken by the JSOCs there, or by the UGS, which, as I've said, are pro-Israel student groups on campus. Complaints at Leeds University. Some of the complaints have been about staff tweeting in my support. So people have had complaints that they should be sacked from their jobs for tweeting in support of academic freedom and in my defence. So that's an extremely worrying thing to note. And of course, this is a pattern which we've seen previously in the US, where it's a long list of people now who've been, had their jobs cancelled or removed or offers withdrawn as a result of pressure from the Zionist movement. There's a recent one, a case where the Israeli consul in part of the US directly intervened and tried to have someone sacked. The case of Stephen Salaita, whose job was taken away from him, who now drives a school bus. Norman Finkelstein is an example from a long time ago. Mark Lamorne Hill, Joseph Massad. There are lots of these cases, and there will be more and more of those cases here.
What's the point of this? At the end of the day, obviously, this is a political move by the Israelis, but why are they so vehement, do you think, particularly here in the UK and the US, in insisting that there shouldn't be criticism of them?
Because the criticism of them, especially in the UK and the US, can have direct negative effects on them. I mean, you mentioned before that Israel is an ally of the UK, and it is an ally in some senses. And of course, the amount of money which is given to the Israelis by the US and the UK, especially by the US, is extraordinary. And, you know, we saw the frisson that went around in the US just the other week when AOC and the squad mentioned this whole question about the budget for the Iron Dome, which the Israelis are requiring the Americans to support. I mean, the idea that that could even be mentioned in Congress is something which deeply worries them, because, of course, they can see the trajectory, which is that the pressure will mount such that the massive military aid there is to the Israelis from the US and the UK and other places might start to dry up. And if it starts to dry up, then that's game over for them, and they know that. So what they want to do is to continue with the process of ethnic cleansing and settlement in Palestine, such that they have an unassailable Jewish majority within what they call Israel, and that there can never be the possibility of a Palestinian state or of Palestinian opposition to their activities. That's what they're scared about. They're scared that the already trending public opinion against them will translate into political decision making, which will threaten their ability to oppress and ethnically cleanse the Palestinians. That's what it's for.
Now we started by talking about propaganda and your interest in it. How would you say that this has been reported in the mass media here in Britain? And I'm assuming you're going to say not very well. Where are some places that listeners can go to actually get some real information on what's happening both on the home front and over in the Middle East in the conflict between Israel and some of its neighbours?
Well, I mean, the places to go in this country and in the US, you know, you start with the Electronic Intifada and the extraordinarily prescient and informative journalism of Asa Winstanley and his colleagues at the Electronic Intifada. There is another website called Mondo Vice, which is also extremely good. And so there are a number of websites you can go to where there is proper reporting of the Zionist movement in this country and in the US, and of course of the activities of the Israeli government and the settlement process in Israel. But then, you know, I mean, if you want to know what's really happening in the Middle East, you need to look at the Israeli press. I mean, things are a lot more open in the Israeli press about what's happening in Israel than they are here, even though they're very much biased towards the state and to the movement, the Zionist movement. And then you want to look at the alternative media, the Palestinian media, the media of the resistance. I don't mean just the resistance in Gaza, but also in the other countries surrounding Israel, where there is an ongoing process of resistance. It's often called the arc of resistance in Yemen, in Lebanon, and in Iraq as well, and in Iran against settler colonialism in Israel. So there is a, you know, when the attacks on Gaza happened in May this year, we all saw the process of the ongoing process of settlement and colonization in East Jerusalem, the invasion of the Al-Aqsa Mosque by the police and the military. Extraordinary scenes we saw there, and that, I think, for many people took the scales from their eyes, and they began to see what Israel is and what Israel does, and it started to make people think that resistance against that is legitimate. And that, I think, is a movement in public opinion which must very much worry the Israelis, that people start to say, well, this isn't just about terrorism, is it? It's about an occupied people fighting back against an occupier. And that's the view that they don't want to spread. And you don't get that view unless you know, pay attention to what's happening in the Middle East and what's happening in Lebanon and what's happening in Iraq and what's happening in Syria. All of these places are engaged in a series of struggles which are linked. So I would say, yes, there's the Electronic Intifada, there's the Mondo Vice, there's other places, but, you know, also put an ear to the ground in the Middle East.